Hey, White Sox fans. Oh, man. This is a fun post-game podcast. This is a fun post-game and pre-game podcast to do because that's what it turns out being. It was already going to be one. The fact that the game ended just before midnight means it really is a post-game and a pre-game podcast. No theme music tonight. We're just trying to do this quick and dirty so we can get as much stuff out to you as possible. We got Dai Billick working the recap, Darren Brown hitting the six-pack, Crystal O'Keefe doing our little social notebook. So we got triple coverage coming, which I'll get to posting on site as soon as I'm done talking with my post-game, pre-game podcast guest. It's post-game podcast number 7. After a victorious ALDS Game 3, White Sox are alive. It's Adrian Serrano joining once again. Thank you for staying up late. I think we already commented that you're pretty much going to finish this podcast and head to the park for Game 4.
Yeah, exactly. I got my I changed over to some chamomile lavender here to settle down and stop the hype, and I can get some sleep tonight.
All right, yeah. If you leave early enough, you can bring your bedroll and probably sleep in the bullpen next to Liam Hendricks, who probably isn't leaving. He's pretty fired up.
I was gonna tweet that out. I was like, yeah, you guys that are out there might as well just like sleep in your seats. See you tomorrow.
Those of us back when I was up there, it would have been a long enough trek back. It would have been very, very tempting to just sort of find a place to crawl and then crack it open the next day. All right. Well, we had a guy. What ended up being 11-6? Man, that was a ridiculous game.
Yeah.
For a time there, it seemed like all was lost. Early on, the Houston had taken the Sox seemingly a great punch between Dylan Cease's great first inning and a little bit of offensive punch, came back and took a lead. And the dugout, frankly, it looked as it should. It looked dead. You didn't see a lot of life. Not that you're supposed to see rah-rah under these circumstances, but it looked a little imposing. Yeah. I don't think it was the negative White Sox fan and us saying, uh-oh.
No, yeah, you didn't see, like, the guys lined up on the, you know, the rail like you would tend to see in a postseason game or an important game that matters. Yeah, the crowd was definitely, like, rocking early, you know, excited to be there. Got down 4 runs, and then the crowd was kind of taken out of it for a minute, you know, kind of brought back a bit by Grandal's homer. They're like, all right. And then Leury's 3-run homer just kind of like, all right, this is meant to be now. There's no way we're not winning this. Leury's hitting, you know, absolute missile center field home runs. Like, this is going to happen. I don't know how, but it's going to happen. And it was a crazy game, but the crowd got back in it at that point. I don't think they ever really settled down from that point on.
I think it's something I'd written, and I want to make a correction. I had said that Luis Robert was going to hit something into the shrubbery or maybe the deck. I really meant to type Leury Garcia. Way to go.
They both start with an L. It's easy.
I got crossed up. Just a couple highlights before we maybe center on a few of the heroes, many heroes of this game. The third and fourth inning were the key offensive outputs for the White Sox. 17 guys made it to the plate, scored 8 runs, 2 homers. Yep. Those were the first 2 extra base hits. And it looked like it might be the only extra base hits of the series until that eighth inning rally as well. The White Sox now have 4 extra base hits. They were 4-for-8 with runners in scoring position. It was just really the offensive breakthrough they needed in the third and the fourth. 16 hits in the game, a White Sox record, 16 strikeouts by the pitchers. I don't think a White Sox record, but some nice symmetry. Tim Anderson continues to carry this team. Now 5-of-6 3-hit games in his postseason career. His 16 hits in the first any 6-game stretch, his 16 hits, most in baseball history. That is not nothing. Extremely impressive. Oh, and I'm just going to correct myself. The 16 Ks actually is a White Sox record, which is interesting given some of the pitching prowess that they've had in the past in their very scant postseason appearances in the past. And Leury Garcia, we will start talking about him first. Adrian, you already referred to his hit probably being the real difference maker in this game. 436 feet to center field, the longest home run he has hit in his life.
Yeah.
And you were expecting it. You probably called it.
I didn't call it. I think I thought he had a chance. I thought, like, all right, this is like Dusty Baker understands, just like we do watching, like, this is an important moment. Like, if they can stop it here, they feel good going forward. But, like, it was like, all right, there's some momentum building. Like, I'm going to, you know, you don't often see somebody pull the pitcher, you know, with 2-0,
yes,
like right in the middle of an at bat. I don't know if it happened. I sent out a tweet. Nobody ever got back to me, but we got to find out if there's ever been a Garcia that's been replaced by a Garcia to face a Garcia. So like, it's like a triple Garcia moment.
If there was not a Trace Garcia's outfield as the White Sox had a few years ago, yeah. I'm fairly certain that that succession of Garcias has not happened. Yeah. Maybe a Garcia, of course, a Garcia facing a Garcia.
But yeah, no. And he absolutely, like, he was all over that pitch. I don't know what came over him, but like, that was, you know, just under his hardest hit ball of his career. Like, you know, he absolutely tattooed that ball. It was great to see. And it's like, once you got those guys, it felt a little more like the 2021 White Sox. Like, once you have a guy that you're not expecting perform, yeah. You know, my takeaway, one of the notes I had from today was that, you know, 16 hits, 11 runs, only one hit and one RBI from Jose Abreu. Like,
yeah,
it's kind of nice to see them score double digits without Jose Abreu having a 3 or 4 RBI game,
right.
You know, because we know he could do that, but like, they need other people to go. It's nice to see, Eloy didn't have a great game, but he had a decent game. It looked like he felt his confidence coming back. It's like, okay, I can do this, you know, like,
yeah,
faced Javier at the end there. And he was just nasty for the Astros. He was just mowing people down. But, I felt like a lot of the guys that have kind of had a little bit of struggle, you know, Sheets had a decent day with 2 singles. Robert only got on base twice, you know.
Yeah, really? Come on, Luis. Step it up.
Even Cesar Hernandez, this is the first time. This is the lineup I kind of expected in game one. I expected Leary in right field and Cesar at second. I know people were kind of down on Leary after that, like, right field, you know, Michael Brantley thing in Houston. But, like, you know, historically, if you look at the numbers, like, Leary has been much better defensively in right field than he has been at second base in his career. So, like, it made sense that that's what they were going to go with, and it kind of switched on us.
Well, and the best thing that happened for Leary is, even though he and Engel, certainly Engel, do funny things with splits, you knew a traditional manager like Tony was going to run him out there right field against a right-hander. So you knew he was going to get a chance to redeem himself in this game. I know there are some people pushing back saying we need Engel in there or whatever, but you know, the truth is, you know, he's the longest tenured guy. I mean, we've talked a lot about him, like, oh, geez, he's, you know, he's not a Taylor for the Dodgers or whatever. You know, he's a replacement level guy, but he's the longest tenured White Sox. It's just wonderful to see him do what he did.
Yeah.
And encroaching on our post-game podcast, God bless her. She apparently has just finished a recap, or she's pausing her recap, and I'm sure it's going to be a delightful one. Can't wait to read it. It's Di Billick, who is doing our Game 3 coverage here. And perhaps you're the lucky charm. Maybe we got to squirrel you into coverage tomorrow, because what's going on, Di? Hey.
What's up? We won. I was just like I said, I wasn't nervous at all. I was fine.
Cool as can be. Cool.
I only cover winners.
Yeah.
I was not messaging Brett saying, I'm nervous. Oh no, what are we gonna do?
Yes, those have been deleted. They're scrubbed. No, they didn't exist actually.
It never happened.
At this point, Di, we are just sort of running through the many heroes of this game. We've just discussed Leury. I think it's time to move on to Yasmani Grandal, because he played several different hero roles here. First, that ridiculous screaming foul ball homer, which sort of gave you a thought, hey, wait, they're seeing this starting pitcher pretty well, Garcia. And then, of course, the home run that sort of was the first counterpunch after the Sox had been staggered. And then the absolutely bananas play, very reminiscent of, I guess, reminiscent of A.J. Pierzynski, except I don't think Yasmani was actually doing anything really to sort of blatantly pull one over on anyone, which turns out to be a controversial play and getting Houston Astros fans up in arms, which I got to say, pretty nice to sit back and chuckle about.
You know what he said in his post-game interview? He said, I'm slow. I was just going. I was just going. Yeah. And you know what? You know, like Tony said, he didn't zig or zag.
Yeah. No one zigged. It was a straight line.
It was, you know, maybe he like shouldered it or something. Also, if he did, good heads up play by him. I'm very mad at AJ tonight. I have covered it in my game coverage, which I am finished with. Mm. And the audacity of him to call that out as if he knew, when he is the dirtiest bitch when it comes to any of that stuff. So here and now, I just want to say for all of us that it's no longer called AJing. It's now the Yaz.
The end.
Yeah, like, not that.
As long as it's not a dirty, dirty play, then it's an AJ.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty clear he did not make any kind of movement like that. Now, granted, he was in the grass, no doubt about it. He was in the grass. Here's another thing that people aren't really paying attention to. As we see the multiple replays, Gurriel, he could have adjusted his throw. I mean, he 100%. Threw it into him. Like, I mean, it would have taken like 6 inches or 2 inches to get past him. It's not like it would have gone way up the line. It would have gone just maybe a little bit to home plate, which would have been the play. It's like,
I think that's what the umps got together and said, like, Grandal made no attempt to disrupt that play. He was running. Maybe he was running a little inside, but there's no rules that says he can't run a little inside, you know, like, especially because the way he grounded that ball over, he rolled it over. He's coming out of the batter's box. Like, he's just kind of going towards the base. But it is funny to see Astros fans call out some cheating.
Give me a break. They need a scapegoat because they have guilty consciences. So they're going to look for anything and just grasp onto it like the dirty cheaters they are. I haven't forgotten.
You know, including some very prominent people in Major League Baseball were making really bold claims and denigrating the White Sox about them being from a crap division and being a mediocre team that can't defend and essentially predicting a sweep. It didn't happen. And now it really might not happen. Yeah, what happened to the sweep?
Happen. It must be some type of cheating. That's the Astros. That is the Astros. Sorry, I got confused.
I would have been very surprised if this White Sox team, just with all the talent, got swept. Like, I wouldn't have been surprised for them to lose to this team just because the amount of postseason experience between the two teams is so wide. But, like, I would have been surprised to see them get swept. So, like, it's not surprising me that it's at least going 4. I never want to hear another Twitter troll talking about Yasmani not doing the little things in baseball. Like, the guy does everything he can do, you know, like, that's just, it's not pretty. He's the James Harden of the MLB.
Yeah.
This game is not attractive, but it's effective.
Adrian, why have the Astros had 5 postseasons in a row? Because they're cheaters. I'm sorry, I forgot again.
I do hope. Yeah,
but it's like, they just, like, they don't think about it. Like, I don't know, like, I don't know if AJ was talked to before this season or this series and said, like, hey, you really got to make sure that people don't think that you're a homer for your old team. Because, like, I feel like even Wainwright was in the booth, like, trying to talk up the White Sox. Like, that was really good. And AJ would be like, go out of his way to, like, no, I'm going to knock that down. You know, like, they should have done this instead. Like, it was really just weird. But, like, just, I can't imagine talking about anything prior to 2020 with the Astros, like, with anything but, like, an asterisk in my own mind. I wouldn't bring it up. Like, I wouldn't necessarily talk about it if they don't want to address that during the broadcast, because it's the MLB broadcast. But, like, just don't talk about it then. Don't talk about history. Don't talk about past stats. Like, just talk about this team and last year's team, and that's it.
You know, another thing, Adrian, that I would hope that they would make note of or just skip is when they're deciding to crow about their great plate discipline and the fact that in 4 of the last 5 seasons, they've had the best strikeout discipline. That directly has to do with the fact that the trash cans were banged. You don't have to, you don't have to say, well, they must suck at it. You don't have to say, man, they've been great. I mean, that direct, you can even talk about the playoffs to Dye's point. I mean, okay, they still made the playoffs, obviously with a lot of aid. That thing is directly affected by the trash. That is the scandal. But instead it's like, yeah, you know, 4 out of 5 years, man, they're darn good with plate discipline. Well, keep being in the can. This trio right here might help a playoff push.
We got 10 think pieces about whether Craig Kimbrel was affected by the, you know, the sticky stuff crackdown, but I got nothing about the Astros.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, literally knowing what pitch is coming.
No kidding.
Or literally that, like, the guy that invented that scam is now coaching the other team in the American League.
But then the whole thing's going to crash, so they got to sort of just keep pretending a little bit. Let's talk bullpen a little bit, because obviously it was outstanding. It has to be outstanding when your starter doesn't make it through 2 innings. Yeah. We'll get to Dylan Cease maybe after the break. Michael Kopech did what he needed to do. Ryan Tepera blew people's minds. Aaron Bummer, whatever's greater than that, he did tonight. And then, you know, okay, Kimbrel and Hendricks, great. But those three guys, holy cow, they really won this game for the White Sox.
I got four guys that I'm like, I can't really, like, I got to take some time and think about, like, who had the most dominant. The one that jumps to mind is Bummer, just because, like, 5Ks for Bummer. Like, he's not a strikeout pitcher. Mm-hmm. Like, he is a ground ball guy. And, like, they gave him the contract when he was pitching really well, and he was averaging, like, you know, maybe, like, 8 or 9 Ks, you know, per nine. Like, now he's up to, like, you know, 11, 12. Like, that's a big add to his game. If he can have that heavy sinker and be throwing that slider that slides 2 feet to the left, like, that is a really, really nasty guy coming out of the bullpen. But yeah, everybody in the bullpen was great. I mean, 16 strikeouts is a record, but the starter only had two, you know, yeah. So 14 from the bullpen.
As long as, I mean, like, our bullpen stepped up, so I'm not going to be mad at Dylan Cease. The thing that shocked me the most was Tapera, because I always tell my dad, I text my dad little Russian flags when Tapera or Kimbrel are up because I think that they're a sleeper cell for the Cubs. I send like little Russian dolls, and it's like it's our joke, but Kimbrel has been much better than Tapera. I know that Tapera has come in and pitched some okay, but every time I see him, I like, my butthole clenches up. I'm like, this is the end. We're going to lose. And do I think he's a sleeper cell? Of course not. It's ludicrous. You wouldn't, like, you know, sabotage your own record. But regardless, I had no trust in Tapera at all. I think he was the one that I trusted the least. And he came in and killed it. I was shocked. That was a preface to Bummer, who sometimes has it and sometimes doesn't. And it was just flawless. I was screaming. It was so sick, man.
Yeah. He came in. It was like Kopech pitched pretty decently. Like, he did give up the homer and, you know, a little bit, but like, he pitched 2 1/3, I think, and almost hit, you know, just under 50 pitches, like, and 2 innings for Tapera was like 23. Like, it was like he was efficient and just like, no, you weren't hitting this. I decided you're not hitting this, and you're not.
Yeah.
This is how I accidentally got an MVP vote last year.
I think Kopech gets some heroism medals for what he did bailing out the team in terms of WPA. He was in the negatives. The two pitchers that stood out, at least in terms of win probability, added Tapera with 97, Bummer with 85. And, you know, those two guys, the 3 2/3 innings, they put together 7 strikeouts, no hits, no walks. I mean, that's key. They shut this team with great plate discipline, really tough bats. They got dangerous bats everywhere, shut them completely down. And who exactly would have thunk that? It's got to make Dusty and the Astros now a bit, put them a bit on their heels and say, okay, now hold on. Those guys weren't even the guys, and they kicked our ass.
100%. This is the first time I've seen, like, the bullpen seem to, like, make an adjustment to what the Astros were trying to do. Like, we played the first two games and the Astros were clearly like, we're not going to swing. We know you guys are going to try to throw really, like, sharp breaking stuff that's out of the zone and never comes close. We know you're going to try to, like, throw fastballs way out, and we're just not going to eat at that. But, like, you know, Tapera and Bummer coming right at them, like, you know, they had to change their approach. They brought it to them rather than waiting for the Astros to bring it, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think it was a more effective game plan.
Okay, let's take a quick break, come right back, talk about a couple other figures from this game, and then preview a little bit about tomorrow, maybe talk a little blackout. We'll do that in the second half of our program, which will begin in just seconds, once Di returns from running back from the other room. Okay, well, we are back. It is part two of Postgame Podcast number 7. We are celebrating the White Sox victory, 11-6, game 3 of the ALDS, ensuring a game. Oh, well, according to Adrian, his alarm clock's ringing already because it's mere minutes for him. He's about to hop on the L or get in his car and head down there because he is there for us in game 4. Tyrone Palmer's going to be there, Celeste Ordonez, probably a number of other people, but those are the ones I know offhand. Let's talk about someone that we have not often lauded as a hero for the White Sox, and we're not sure we'd exactly call him a hero, but here's the name I'm going to throw out at you, Tony La Russa.
I knew you were going to say it.
I will give Tony his credit today, mostly just for finally letting Michael Kopech pitch. It's the crazy part about the fact that, like,
such a low bar.
Michael Kopech had a decent game. He had some rough start, but like you realize like, well, this is his first postseason appearance. Like, well, like it's in my mind, it's like, oh, I have to stop and think about that because this is the third game. And there's no way in my mind that Michael Kopech has not appeared until the third game of this 5-game series. But, you know, here we are. Mm-hmm. Luckily he stayed under 50 pitches. So I imagine that he's still available, you know, for at least an inning tomorrow, or at least, you know, a couple batters, mm-hmm. If he has to go. But yeah, no, I can't imagine. But yeah, no, Tony did everything right today. Like I said, this is this lineup I expected from game one. Like, so I kind of, I'm like, all right, now I see it, you know, now yeah. I see the plan.
And obviously it isn't. Yeah. Go ahead, Di.
I think that Kopech calmed everything down. So he definitely mm-hmm. deserves that credit. He did great. He did his job. He didn't do perfectly, but I mean, like, give me a break. He was good. He did the job. The only thing that I thought of, just because I was really nervous when the game started, was like, oh, Cesar Hernandez. And that's all. I mean, everything else seemed like Tony knew what he was doing. And you know what? He yanked Cease at the exact right time. He pulled Kopech at the right time. Everything was just clicking today.
Yeah, and it helps when the guys you're calling on come through. I mean, obviously, we know the manager's just the guy. I don't know what he's driving the bus, whatever dumb metaphor I'm not going to be able to find here. But, you know, he's going to get maybe even undue credit for the team just executing, right? So, I mean, obviously, we can't just say, well, he doesn't deserve credit, but then yell at him about games one and two, of course. But, you know, there's something to be said. He didn't get in the way. He didn't overmanage, or just make a defensive change that's curious. There were people even speculating, mm-hmm. well, maybe Adam Engel is hurt, which is why he didn't start today, perhaps, or why he had to leave the game in game two. No, he was out there in the ninth inning. So that's yeah. not true. So, I mean, we want to try to find maybe excuses for why some of these things happened. You know, certainly the Tony La Russa apologists want to. And, you know, maybe it just wasn't. Maybe he just, he's, it's been, what, 11 years? Yeah. Maybe he's getting back into it too. And, you know, but I think it's fair to tip a cap, even if it's in the category of staying out of the way. I think he did what he needed to do, and you got to put this one in the definitely in the win column for Tony.
Yeah, I think the big part of what you said there was that the biggest thing is that just this was the first game that like Tony didn't do anything that was really crazy outside of what everybody would expect. Like, we came in expecting Adam Engel to be a defensive replacement, which is yeah. what he was today. We expected, you know, mm-hmm. Leary played himself into a starting role. We expected, you know, Gavin Sheets also played himself into a starting role at DH. Like, so we kind of, this is the only thing that Tony really probably inserted himself in that was outside of the realm of normal, was just trying to that little get right moment for Kimbrel to get him back in the mm-hmm. game and get some positive success. You kind of felt that. I thought he was going to continue after they got the extra runs, but yeah. I think Liam would have fought him. I really think Liam, like, you saw Liam's face when like he had to stop warming up because you saw Kimbrel was going to come in. And I thought Liam was going to just like have a meltdown. He wanted to pitch so badly.
But then he could have
to be in there.
But then he could have
the crowd. The crowd is absolutely yeah. bonkers, and Liam cannot pitch, and he's just feeling it.
but if he had just sat down and let Kimbrel take the rest of the game, he could have started game four, because that's the yeah. transition to the next thing we're talking about.
My joke was like, if Liam doesn't get in here, he's pitching three innings tomorrow.
Yeah. Or... We're gonna skip talking maybe about Cease unless we end up with bonus time here, but let's talk about now what this, because on the post game, you know, they were talking about, oh man, the Sox are in great position. Now, of course, momentum has shifted. The bats are out of cold storage. They actually can hit things that aren't singles, even though, boy, the percentage is still like 98% singles. Mm-hmm. But pitching wise, they're not necessarily in great shape. We're presuming yeah. Rodon is the start. I don't know if you've,
I think he's listed as official.
He is listed as official. All right.
Yeah. So. And I think it's Urquidy for,
right.
Astros. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, he's going to give you what he can, and we don't know if that's just going to be a couple innings. We're hoping it's going to be, you know, five or six, and it probably will end up being somewhere in between. Obviously, the bar has been set pretty low given Dylan's start today, but then
three or four should be good.
Right. I mean, Liam Hendricks is probably good for at least two tomorrow. Kimbrel obviously is going to be fresh, whether that's a good thing or not. I mean, imagine anybody with a day off coming up can pretty much come back out. You were even mentioning Michael Kopech, Adrian. So, I mean, it's still probably all hands on deck. Not necessarily everybody's fresh, but, you know, do we see a pattern that's going to happen with the pitching? Is it just, do you think Kopech is still the first guy to come in when Rodon is pulled?
I don't know if he's necessarily the first guy to come in because he was the only guy that actually kind of worked a little bit, you know, getting up towards 50 pitches. That's the really the underscore of all of this, like, you know, really great pitching by the bullpen, but bummer, you know, right around 20, 23 pitches, like the 25 for, you know, some other guys like Tapera was like right around 25, like only 10 for Liam Hendricks. So these guys that came in, they were effective and they really didn't put a lot of pitches up. So like, I expect everybody, but you know, if anybody's got any like limit, maybe Kopech's limited to one inning instead of multiple innings, but, like I expect the full bullpen array to be out there. And even, you know, if they can get the win tomorrow, like I expect, you know, maybe a silver lining is that Dylan Cease is available, you know, if they need somebody in that game five, like, so like they have a day off and, you know, more arms available. I think Carlos Rodon's going to give you everything he can. I think he's going to be trying to go full effort right off the bat to see, like, if I can give you two decent innings and, you know, whatever I can give you, I'm going to try to. So I think they've only faced the Astros starter once before, I think once earlier this year, but I think Engel was batting second that game. So like, you, how much you can take from that, I don't know. Like, that's not the real lineup. Tim was 0-for-4. Tim's not going to go 0-for-4. He's probably going to have three hits. Like, cause that's what Tim does. Three hits in five of his six playoff games.
Right. And game five is not going to be concerned because based on rest and ineffectiveness, we've got the entire starting rotation is going to be available for game five. So we really just got to get to a game five. Rodon going out tomorrow. How are you feeling about that? Do you think this momentum has really shifted to really get his pitching a little as sharp as it's been and maybe even add a little velocity? He's had a lot of rest.
Concerned about his shoulder, of course, naturally, like we all are. But I think that with the offense coming back to life and everyone breathing life into our lineup, that being good for two or three innings is going to be what I expect, just based on the fact that Tony said he probably wasn't going to be ready to go in time for the playoffs. The fact that, you know, we're putting him in now is awesome because he's great. But luckily we have the bullpen to back it up, so I feel okay with it. With a win today, I'm 80% less nervous, especially in comparison to the Astros bullpen. Ours is better. And you know, like, you can look at the numbers and argue, but you're wrong if you argue.
And there's something to be said, you know, we talk about, you know, momentum and it doesn't exist and all that. But here, the fact that the White Sox had that little mini rally that made even the use of Liam Hendricks perhaps even questionable does bode well. I think there's something to be said for how that spills into, especially given, again, Adrian, I think, is already on the road on his way to game four with the fact that this isn't even a night game. This isn't night to night. They are playing, I mean, as of the end of the game, 15 hours later would be first pitch. I think that momentum will play into it. So then if the White Sox can strike first two, three innings, that's going to it could give Rodon unexpected confidence and give him maybe even a little longer leash. If nothing else, it's going to allow them to get away with maybe just three innings from Rodon and go right to the bullpen because you've already got that lead. It bodes really well. Here's one thing I do want to throw out there before we do run out of time. And that is, even if the White Sox lost this game, it was such a relief to see that the White Sox were able to get a little bit of luck. They'd gone two plus games with zero luck, good breaks.
And
the fact that the White Sox, they were putting together all this stuff that was driving us crazy about that. It was funny. We weren't talking about how bad the Astros defense must be because their positioning was wrong. All these little dinky singles, another 8,000 singles, this time station to station, scoring guys, fundamental play that didn't seem too good because the first baseman throws the ball into the catcher running toward him. Okay, whatever. But it's just nice to see some of those breaks, and it happened in a huge burst. And it maybe even extends to some of the two strike hits, you know, that fell that didn't, because the White Sox were really doing everything that was so annoying about the Astros in the first two games. It turned and now it's the White Sox doing it. That feels like something that can carry to a game four as well.
Yeah, I'm not a huge believer in momentum as far as teams, but there is something to be said for the that feeling that kind of comes over a team or a single player when everything's going bad. We talked about Aloy earlier, like just kind of getting those hits and that RBI, like just feeling like, oh yeah, I can do this again. Like, you don't feel like the world's out to get you. Yeah. And like, I felt like, yeah, for the first two games, like anything that could have went the White Sox way did not. But like, then we finally got a little bit of baseball happening in that third inning, a couple, you know, bleeders just kind of got through, you know, and like, that's going to happen eventually to everybody, but it's nice to see them kind of get over that hump and feel like, all right, it's baseball again, you know, don't have to take it so seriously.
It's more than momentum. as well. It's home field advantage. Our home record is ludicrous and unfortunate when you look at the big picture, but fortunate when, you know, we have another game at home. And because of that, it seems like we'll force us to game five with the momentum and the home field. So, woo, buddy. Yeah.
Well, shocking that in this game, only one player didn't get on base of the regulars twice. And that's Jose Abreu. I think, Adrian, you mentioned the fact that, that what was great about this game, too, is it wasn't carried by Jose Abreu in any way. But everybody else just was racking up the on base, including walks. You know, I think five walks for the White Sox.
All 10 people. I think all 10 Sox that had an at-bat got a hit.
True. Adam Engel, poor guy.
Adam Engel didn't get, he got in, but he didn't get in at bat. So like, he doesn't count, but like everybody that got in, it felt like it was nice to see Andrew Vaughn come in and get a little bit of success and like, and feel like, I felt like the weight of the world was on his shoulders the last 2 months as he was just absolutely bottoming out. So it has to feel good to come in a big moment and do what he does with only two lefties on the Astros, you know, bullpen roster. You're not going to see a lot of Andrew Vaughn, but like, it's good to see him in that one moment come through.
Now, Di, I understand, having done it even on the beat and certainly for Southside Sox, that the game recap can be a very arduous process. It takes a lot out of you. I can see that you hit the showers, you got showered up, you came back out with a new uniform. So you're excused for not participating in the blackout for this podcast. However, let's talk about how the blackout looked. It seemed a little less effective, a little less uniform than 2008, but in the ballpark, and the players seemed like 2-1 said that was a factor.
100%. On post-game interviews, they said, I mean, everyone mentioned how fired up they were and how much they were feeding off the crowd. And, you know, some people didn't follow the instructions of the very simple homework. Don't we all have like at least three like White Sox shirts that are black? And if not, don't we own black clothes? Because, wow. You know, like a black blank t-shirt? Mm-hmm. Anyway, besides the point, it was electric. You know what fired me up the most? The chants of cheater, cheater. Oh, my God. Oh my. Like, I just want everyone to hear it. I want everyone to hear it and never forget. But also, I was like happy and proud to see that everyone can see what a great fan base we have and how fired up we were. I mean, like, there's not a lot of fan bases where you can go out and you can tell that the majority of people in the crowd know their baseball, watch a lot of the games, know what they're talking about, know the players, and just have a general, like, I'm there for baseball, not to be in this glorified bar because there's nothing else to do here or whatever it is.
Right.
But yeah, several players said that they got so fired up by the crowd and by the blackout. I wasn't there in person, and I wasn't there in person at the 08. I watched both on TV. I don't know, Brett, you were there in person in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think, what do you think was more effective or more exciting?
Well, I think the novelty, I think, probably gives the edge to 2008. The fact that the towels were all black in these ones, I'm not sure why they did that, but just took a little bit off. But then at the same time, this year, it's the playoffs. I know getting into the playoffs is a big deal. And just the novelty of it was amazing. Of course, the game was truly classic. This one wasn't even classic in the same way because it was sort of sloppy and weird. But I mean, this was for something. So, I mean, you might really, when it comes down to it, you might have to give the edge of this game just because, all right, well, this could be part of a World Series run in a way that, you know, sort of 2008 blackout game was sort of. But, you know, I'll just parrot what Tim Anderson said after the game. Yeah, it's the biggest crowd I've ever been to. Okay, baby. You know, so hey, baby.
Yeah, I feel like the novelty of it in 2008 kind of got people to buy in a little more. I want to say, like, watching that game on TV, I remember, like,
the novelty?
Like,
what do you mean? What do you mean about the novelty? What are you talking about?
Now, like, there's the blackout.
Just because it hadn't happened before. So, like, it felt like 98-99% of the crowd was in black. You would see, like, the occasional white t-shirt from that game back then. But, like, now, the crowd was probably crazier and more energetic this time because we had 13 years to wait instead of 5 years since, or 3 years since a World Series, you know, when the blackout game happened. Like, you kind of had a winning team. Like, we haven't had a winning in a while. So, like, this fan base is hungry. But, like, yeah, I did feel like maybe it was like 90% of people were in black, and there was quite a few that weren't or not trying, especially right behind home plate in the very expensive seats. It's like, come on, you can't give these guys,
you got Astros fans,
but you can't give them a black shirt to wear. Like,
yeah, really.
You can see that motherfucking Eminem's jacket.
Yeah, well, yeah. You know.
I'm happy to see that every regular season game.
I would, if I'm Jerry, I get that guy an all black Eminem's jacket. Like, cause he's there, he's paying for tickets. Like, you know, what's it to you? Like, just get in this really slick Eminem's White Sox hybrid jacket. Like, and he's going to wear it probably, you know, at other games.
They might be giving Eminem's guy seats to Kane guy now. I don't know.
But yeah, no, back to what Di was saying earlier, like, I was getting videos from people that were there, and like, each individual section had their own like chants going, just absolutely like attacking the Astros players. Like, Michael Brantley was absolutely getting it all day. Every time he was in the outfield, like, they were going like, and it wasn't like, hey, number whatever. Like, no, it's, hey, Michael Brantley.
Personal.
I know who you are.
Here's your baseball card.
My favorite chant came at the very end of the ninth inning. Socks in five. Yep. Socks in
carried
five.
On throughout. Yep.
Yeah, Liam's on board with it too.
Yeah, he is.
Socks in five in his post game interview. Like, yep. All right, that's it. Hashtag socks in five. Like, that's what we're doing.
So all black tomorrow, Adrian. You know
I'm doing it. Yeah.
Okay.
I did it all day today. I wasn't there at the game in person, but I was all day, you know, in black today. So
I'll be doing the same. You know, we won't have none of us will have time to change. So we're just gonna like, okay, yeah, this is what it is.
It looks like I'm in my office right now, but this is just a backdrop. But I'm actually up on the, you know.
That's nice. You did that HD thing. That's really cool. Yeah, I think Liam. I think he heard his name. I think he's right around the corner.
This is the new fundamentals.
Nice. Oh man, it really is warm up there. Wow, that's really sweet. I thought it'd be chilly by now, but yeah, that's one factor I think too. Between 2008 now, it was cold 2008 game, and somehow, even though this is 2 weeks later in the year, is not warm. As cold. So I guess maybe that makes people feel a little froggy. Yeah, I'm gonna wear my white because the sun might beat down on me. I don't know. We'll see what happens tomorrow for a day game, because it is just mere hours away. And of course, this is our duel. Post game and pre-game, because the turnaround is quick. The fact that the game took 8,000 hours to finish only made it easier not to do a pre-game for this next game. But we are going to be with you after the game, after the game four victory. We'll be talking post game podcast, and then off day we'll be previewing, game five. And then after game five's win and the improbable march onto the ALCS, we'll be doing a post game there too. So we'll keep that stuff running at you only when they sort of smash into each other, aided or not by a 5.5 hour game. Will we sort of skip the pregame thing, but we've previewed about as much as you can. Momentum's going to continue to kick for the Sox, whatever that means. I know somebody like Tim Anderson, baby, he's feeling it. So he doesn't care about your numbers. He is feeling it. And let's not question him. 16 hits in six games, never been done in the playoffs before. So, you know, kudos to Tim. My God, he has carried this team now really in two playoff series, and God bless him for it, because he is the heartbeat of this ball club. So full coverage. I'm going to get to all the editing to get all the game three stuff up here tonight, along with this podcast. And tomorrow we're going to have another full slate of a lot of expanded coverage of the game, of what will be a victorious. Adrian's going to see his first in-person playoff victory, correct?
Yep. And the last game I was there was Carlos Rodon's last start of the regular season. He didn't have his best stuff, but he gave five innings, one hit. So, like, yeah, we get something close to that. Like, I'm going to be more than happy, you know? Like, I think Carlos Rodon's going to give you everything. He's going to leave everything on the field. This might be his last White Sox start. He knows it. This might be his last time pitching in front of this crowd. It's going to be an emotional time. He's going to give it to us, I think.
I mean, he's pitching for his next contract, but you know that those buttons are getting unbuttoned. You know he is going, even though it's like, oh, boy.
He might not have a jersey on by the fifth inning, but he's going to be out there.
Yeah. So, you know, he's – but basically what you're saying, Adrian, is you're a good luck charm. That's cool.
Yeah, that's what I'm going for. Cool. Yeah. And I'm looking for Luis Robert. You didn't get it today, but I think you're going to get it tomorrow. He just missed a few balls. He's still seeing the ball so well right now. Like, I think he's going to get something soon. We're going to have a big coming out party, if there is even possible to even look better than he has already in the postseason, Luis Robert is going to, you know, really make a name for himself soon here.
The three of us feeling good about a victory tomorrow. Is that the prediction?
Yeah. Game five. I don't know what's going to happen in game five, but we're going to get there.
Okay. We're going to get to a game five. I'm assuming Dai is predicting the same thing. And so in that case, who knows? Maybe some of us will be even on more coverage for a game five, which I haven't exactly planned out completely. So on behalf of Dai Bilek, our recapper for today, and Adrian Serrano, our good luck charm connected by the hip with
Just go ahead and start looking for plane tickets
flights down to Houston. Okay. All right, flights. The tickets apparently are cheaper.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Let's book some flights. And we look forward to covering, having a great game four coverage for you at Southside Sox. And of course, game five, because it's going to happen. But as always, thanks for reading. Thanks for listening to our podcast. And thanks for even watching sometimes. Adrian, thanks for hopping on in this very late hour. And have yourself a hell of a time at the game tomorrow.
Sleep, and I'm going to be out there. Hopefully, see some people.
All right. Sweet. Sweet. Have a good time tomorrow.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back with you with more stuff tomorrow.